now plugged in to the Delphi podcast.
What's up, guys? Welcome back to the Delphi podcast. I'm Tom Shaughnessy, and I help lead Delphi Ventures, as well as host some of the most in-the-weeds and thought-provoking guests across crypto, spanning Layer 1s to DeFi, NFTs, and beyond. The goal is to have fun, but also to dive deep and offer foundational episodes on projects and founders. Also, check out our research on Delphi Digital or miss out on the most compelling research there is. It's up to you. As a reminder, nothing said on this podcast is a solicitation to buy or sell any security or token or to make any financial decisions. Delphi Ventures may hold tokens mentioned, so check out our transparency page in the show notes for more info. With that, let's dive in. See you guys on the other side.
Hey, everyone. Welcome back to the Delphi podcast. I'm your co-host, Avi, here with my other co-host from Delphi Digital, Ken, our L1 expert. Today, we have Brian and Ryan from Layer Zero team, and we're going to be discussing the Layer Zero cross-chain communication platform, as well as their new cross-chain liquidity application, Stargate. We'll get into the potential use cases for Layer Zero, what does it mean for the ecosystem at large, and all kinds of other exciting stuff. So let's jump right into it. Brian and Ryan, would you introduce yourself for our listeners?
Yeah, I'm Brian. I'm CEO of Layer Zero Labs. This is Ryan, our technical CTO. Nice to meet everybody. Thanks for having us.
Hi, my name is Ryan Zarek, and I'm the CTO of Layer Zero Labs.
Awesome. So a good place to begin is where you guys see the future of blockchains. You're building a cross-chain communication platform, which for many years has been a design challenge for the blockchain space. We'd love to just begin with your thesis on the future of blockchains.
Yeah, I mean, I think, and it's definitely advanced this year where, you know, it was like a lot of people had this thesis. It's not a unique thesis. It will kind of live in a multi-chain world, but it was, let's say, less founded 12 months ago than it is now, right? Where over the last 12 months, we've seen the explosion, whether it be Solana or Avalanche or all of these other ecosystems that have really sort of cemented like, okay, you know, this is a real thing that is likely to happen. We can see the extension. We can see that there are real vibrant ecosystems being built here. And I think there's a much stronger case for it now. So we've always kind of believed that, but it's much easier to believe at this point in time. And I think everyone can kind of see that that's a potential direction we may be moving in. And so, yeah, we strongly believe, I think about it kind of like how I think about programming languages. But before you write some application, you don't say, I'm definitely going to write this thing in JavaScript. You try to figure out what you're building, and maybe you write the front end in React, and then maybe you need speed, so you write a piece in C, and then maybe like you need more speed, or you need parallelization, like you go down and write CUDA, or you use the tools that are needed for the solution. And I think a lot of times parts of these different trade-offs are going to be seen similar within chains, right? So you have certain chains that are high security and low throughput, and certain chains that are fast TPS and high throughput, and all these different trade-offs in between where right now everything is an isolated single chain application. That's probably going to be the way for a while, right? Where you'll get multiple applications kind of implemented across chains. So now maybe you have a DEX that can communicate across these chains, but eventually you might actually have pieces of that being offloaded, right? So you might have, I guess Axie is even a great example where, right, they do the gameplay on one chain and then it can like resolve out, or there can be any things like that where you have certain portions of computation or of action within an application that you might want to do based on the various trade-offs. So no, we think it is certainly moving that way. And the space seems to be following that as well.
Yeah, I think at Delphi Digital, we fully agree. And that's part of the reason why we're so excited for Layer Zero and to be investors with you guys. Let's jump into how Layer Zero like fits into that stack that you're explaining. What is it at a high level?
Yeah, so I mean, I think at a high level, it's an omni-chain interoperability protocol. The high-level mission is connect every contract on every chain to every contract on every other chain. Pure interoperability. And I think it's important to kind of understand the differences between what exists to kind of know what it really is. So there, prior to this, there are two main ways that people approach interoperability. The first way is kind of 95% plus of applications. So you have these two chains, they're atomic in state, kind of they know their own thing, but nothing outside, and you want them to communicate. So the solution is we're going to, you know, put our own chain in the middle, and that's going to basically deal with this communication. So you write a transaction from the source chain, the middle chain forms some sort of consensus as to the validity of that transaction, and then it writes a transaction out. And that's like a really, really important caveat, because what it means is that the destination chains are implicitly trusting that middle chain, and the middle chain has complete signing authority over destination chains. So, you know, you saw this in the Poly network hack, you've seen this in a bunch of other places, where if that middle chain is corrupted, even for a small number of blocks, it has the ability to just tap all liquidity on all paired chains basically instantly, because they're implicitly trusting that whatever comes from it is valid. And so that's just, you know, you see as this grows and becomes more connected, like a current state of these things, it's still fairly new, but, you know, let's say fairly weak security properties, you know, 10 to 30 validating nodes, $200-300 million in bonded value, but they're meant to secure kind of tens of billions of dollars of connected liquidity. And it's hard enough to secure a layer one. I mean, you look at the kind of 60 to 150 block reorgs happening weekly on Polygon and some of these other chains, like it's difficult. It's hard. Security is hard. And so to do this on a chain that has completely different security incentives, where there's nothing being built on top of it, and make sure that is, you know, never corrupted for any period of time ever, is a difficult proposition, and not one that we were sort of willing to build on top of. And that was kind of the impetus for doing this. And so the only other real solution is kind of IBC style, where you're going to run a complete light node on chain. You're going to take the entire block history from one chain, take its block headers, write them sequentially to another chain, and vice versa. It's amazing. Once you have that, you know, you just submit the transaction, do the walk, and validate that the proof is valid. But the bad part is that writes on blockchains are just like incredibly expensive. So, you know, pairing this to Ethereum is kind of like tens of millions of dollars per day per pairwise chain. So, and that was the state of things. And that's, you know, what we were looking into as we were trying to build other things. That's what we were presented with. And we said, none of this works. None of this is something we would ever build on top of right now. So we invented something we call an ultralight node, which is effectively the process of taking one single block in isolation and streaming it on demand. So in order to validate a block directly on chain, you kind of need two pieces of information. You need the block header, which contains the receipts route, and you need the transaction proof. So for an EVM, that's a Merkle Patricia proof. We split this up where you have an oracle in a traditional sense is forwarding the block header. This is Chainlink, Band, Pith, Super Oracles, etc. And then you have a relayer, which is an open permissionless system who is forwarding the transaction proof. Now, you know, we can dive into the technicals of this, but it basically reduces down to two interesting properties. The first is that the worst case security of this configuration is equivalent to the best case security of the chosen oracle. So if you choose Chainlink as your oracle, the very worst case is that your oracle and your relayer are the exact same entity. They agree on everything. They're in complete collusion, whether malicious or not. But they just, you know, they're one thing. And that still has a base case security as being as secure as the Chainlink DON in this case. So the worst case security of this configuration is equivalent to the best case security of the chosen oracle. And then the other interesting property is that even in the case that your oracle becomes malicious, it has been corrupted, it's in collusion with relayer A, they're performing an attack. In this case, only user applications accepting messages from exactly that oracle and relayer A would be affected. So anybody using relayer B through Z, anybody relaying their own transactions, anybody using any of the other oracles, completely unaffected. So you've now taken what was a giant pool of risk and you've effectively sharded or siloed it. So, and that's just like an extremely attractive property to have in this kind of system. So even when you do break the base case security of the oracle and you have a relayer that is, you know, colluding with you and malicious, the cost of that attack just becomes exponentially higher, because rather than winning the entire pool that was sitting in the middle chain, you now only win one tiny sliver. And again, that's just a great property to have. So in terms of security properties, that's, you know, that's kind of the difference between most of the existing solutions. In terms of implementation, you know, goal has always just been dead simple. We're developers first. User applications implement two things, send and receive. That's it. They're sending generic bytes payload and they're interpreting them when they receive them. Anything that you can write in Solidity, you can write in Rust, et cetera. If you can build it on chain right now, you can do it with layer zero across multiple chains. So we've built it to be as modular as humanly possible. And I can kind of stop there. I think that's enough of a high level overview.
Yep. Thanks for that. Definitely. So you touched on great points. One of them is the siloed risk structure. And the other one that that I picked from your words is that anyone that runs its own node. So are we imagining a world where like user applications, they are actually running their own real layers and for the most of the time? And how many Oracle relayer combinations do you expect here? And another point that I would like you to expand on is, what are the security implications for liquidity providers and users? So
yep.
I really liked cross-chain designs where users who actually do the swaps and all that have a different and very weak trust assumptions compared to liquidity providers. So would like to have your view on this point as well.
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. And some of that might be better to get into when we talk about Stargate, because Stargate kind of houses a bunch of that. But in terms of the relayer network, the relayer network is completely open, right? So anybody can run a relayer. But one thing that we care very deeply about is that the user applications themselves have complete control over all of the levers in terms of security. So what this means is that each user application, and their defaults if they don't want to do it, but each user application has the ability to specify exactly what Oracle they want, exactly what relayer they want, and also they're responsible or able to be responsible for the number of confirmations coming from the source chain, right? So if you want to bypass a roll-up time, if you want to... whatever, whether it's short or long, all of those things, like ultimately the user application is the one who's bearing the risk on their liquidity. And so the user application should have control over that. We don't like controlled systems where they don't have any say in it, and sort of a bad configuration at the protocol level has can have a massive impact on these protocols. And so that's something that we were very particular about. We wouldn't want to build on something like that. So, there are going to be, we have partners for a lot of relayers kind of from day one. We're going to operate a relayer at Layer Zero Labs. We certainly expect larger projects, right? Like the Aves of the world, the Sushi of the world, whatever, and you're responsible for kind of $20 billion of liquidity in Aave. It doesn't matter what communication protocol you're building across, like there's some element of risk there, period. And so what this allows is that Aave can run their own relayer, and as long as they are not in malicious collusion with the Oracle against themselves, they have 100% control over all of their transactions. It doesn't matter if the Oracle is completely malicious, if Aave is forwarding honest transaction proofs, and that means it's just going to fail to resolve on the destination chain and there is zero risk to their liquidity. And so that's something that we cared a lot about. So we see a world where, let's say you have kind of five primary Oracle providers as there are right now, maybe 20 plus different relayers that get kind of significant use. And then on top of that, we expect there to be aggregates. So we've left the implementation modular enough that, you can have a relayer that is an aggregate of a couple querying for best price, or is using two out of three consensus on Oracles, or, there's all these different things where you can see these kind of subsets evolving. But that's sort of how we're thinking about that landscape right now.
Nice. I want to jump back to an earlier point that you touched on, which was the ultralight node and kind of the architecture that you guys have designed here. The way that I think of a lot of these like bridge cross-chain solutions are that they're performing some sort of service. There's many different participants who are, executing some sort of action. And when you have more participants who are executing a heavier transaction or action, it becomes more costly and more inefficient. And what you guys have done here has kind of reinvented that architecture in a really light and efficient way. And I'd like for you to maybe like dive a bit deeper into like that efficiency, because I think that's a really core to the what we're excited about with Layer Zero.
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the big things is, again, when you have some chain that sits in the middle, it has its own throughput issues, it has its own security issues. We're not like any of the things that happen in the middle, whether it be the Oracle passing the block header or the relayer forwarding the transaction proof. Like, it's important to understand that there is no consensus being formed. There's no validation being done. Like, none of that is happening all chain. So validation happens directly on chain. That walk of that tree to the root and sort of validating that transaction is completely on chain. So the bounds of sort of what is able to be process, et cetera, really just rely on the bounds of whatever the transacting chains are. So if you're, you know, if you're going between Solana and some other high throughput chain, like your throughput is just going to be astronomically high. There are really no constraints at the middle layer because forwarding a block header or forwarding a transaction proof is just such a light operation for the oracles and the relayers that it can just be done in tremendous volume, right? It's much less of a lift than it is in most of the other solutions. So there are, you know, there are still restrictions in terms of throughputs. Like you can only fit so many transactions into a block on Ethereum. Like that's just the nature of the chain itself, right? But we're not adding any additional bottlenecks. We're not adding, we're trying to add as little additional complexity as humanly possible while still maintaining this sort of trust minimized communication with all the, you know, properties that you would want those systems to have.
Yep. And I think it's also important to make a distinction between asset transfers, right, and just generic messaging, because while layer zero and the imminent application of it is like these cross chain asset transfers, right, it's actually a generic data messaging protocol. Could you maybe talk about, you know, how you might see that space open up a brand new design space for developers within blockchains to kind of build applications that maybe don't make quite sense today, but might in the future?
Yeah, 100%. And so that's something, again, that everybody we'd seen prior to this was only focused on asset transfer. Like everybody want, you know, even at the communication level, they're just building some derivative of a DEX or a bridge. And like, that's a focus. And I get it, because that is definitely the large bulk of what we're doing. And like, ultimately, that is just the way things interact right now. But there are a lot of cases where, you know, generic messaging may make sense. There's applications that may need to share state, and that may be whether it's sort of yield aggregation or rebalancing across these chains, where you're kind of trying to trigger certain events across chains to sort of, whether it be governance metrics and sort of like how emissions are set. Unified governance is another one where you're just like casting votes from all of these chains to a protocol, basically, rather than having it be on a single chain. Lending and borrowing is one that I talk about a lot, where like the current process for lending and borrowing is you'll collateralize ETH on Ethereum, you'll borrow, you'll bridge, which is a fee, you'll swap, which is a fee, you'll farm some opportunity, you'll swap back, you'll bridge back, you'll repay the loan, and like you'll get back your collateral. But with something like this, like a good generic messaging, you can collateralize on your chain A, you send a message to chain B confirming the collateral, borrow directly in native assets there, farm, repay, message comes back, collateral's unlocked. So like all of the bridging, all the swapping, all of those fees are all abstracted away. Tons of uses within gaming, again, of just like state share between applications. But I think there's going to be a lot that doesn't explicitly involve like, hey, we need pools of liquidity and we're transferring assets across.
Yeah, that's awesome. I think it's green pastures here. I'm imagining one application of abstracting away complexity through the wallet, wallet extensions, right? Being able to interact like cross chain from a single interface, I think is going to be like, would be huge. It sounds like
we're very bullish on future wallet integrations. Definitely.
Right, so there's a little bit of alpha there.
So we went over the layer zero, which is the bottom layer, so to say, which doesn't do consensus, which does validation on-chain at the destination chain. And all sorts of cool applications can be built on top of it. And you guys are building the first application that's going to sit on top of layer zero, that is Stargate. So without further ado, I think we can dive into what Stargate is, how it differs from many applications out there that are all trying to somewhat similar. They're all trying to solve the somewhat similar problem. So with that, I leave the mic to you guys.
Sure. So for Stargate specifically, like originally the goal was, we're going to make layer zero and it's going to be amazing. It's going to be the sort of best case communications protocol and a bunch of people are going to come build on it. But we realized over time that there's just like a really big hurdle early on in trying to solve a couple of pieces of this. So I'll actually dive into Ryan's bridging trilemma in a moment, but I'll explain kind of at a high level why this came about. So, you know, if you're a DEX, right, if you're a Uniswap or SushiSwap or whatever it may be, there are a couple ways that you might approach building a cross-chain DEX. So the first kind of naive way would be, you know, you're going to have a pool of ETH on Ethereum and a pool of SOL on Solana, and those two pools kind of become your ETH-SOL LP, and you're going to send a transaction, and it's going to land, and you're going to execute XY equals K. And this becomes a little bit problematic because, like, most of these protocols right now don't have single-sided liquidity pools. They'll need to incentivize these liquidity pools. XY equals K needs to be processed sequentially on the entire pool. So like only one of the chain gets kind of one-way validation or one-way sort of execution. The other one needs an ACK. So it becomes like fairly messy where there's a bunch of changes to core protocol. And then of course they need like ETH AVAX and ETH MATIC and like, you know, all these other pairs. So a huge amount of LP needs to be injected in the system to create this in a functional manner. Another way that you might approach this is, okay, we're going to, you know, we'll keep our existing pools and we'll kind of pool some bridged asset in the middle. So we'll say that's USDC for right now. So now we're going to have pools of USDC. So, you know, they still need to implement single-sided liquidity pools. They still need to incentivize these pools. They still need to do it kind of every pairwise pathway along the chains. But now they could do something that's like, you know, maybe ETH to USDC, bridge the USDC, and then go USDC to SOL. Because like those exist on both chains. And so now we get to keep all of the existing LP. We're not reinventing everything or sort of adding all this liquidity, but we do still need these pairwise pathways of USDC across all of these chains. So it's still a pretty big ask. And then the other thing is that, you know, let's say Uniswap implements this, well then, you know, also SushiSwap and QuickSwap and Trader Joe, and like everybody just needs to re-implement this exact same liquidity transfer layer and top of yield aggregators and like all of these other applications. Like it's just something that's so common that we really wanted to just abstract this away. So we consider Stargate being like a key composable DeFi Lego in terms of this is something that can sit in the middle. Stargate does exactly that. It's a bridge. It deals in asset transfer and 100% native assets. So let's say, again, USDC pools on both sides. And what this allows is that now your Sushis, your Unis, your whoever that is who's building this cross-chain DEX, they can now execute this swap, bridge swap over Stargate in one single transaction from the source chain. It will take zero changes to their existing protocol, and they have zero risks to their liquidity, which is extremely important early on. So what this means is Stargate houses 100% of that risk. So, you know, if we're on SushiSwap, Sushi on chain A gets in ETH and spits out USDC. That's a complete transaction in that Sushi protocol, exactly how it works now. Stargate takes that USDC, bridges it over. All of the messaging risk, all the liquidity risk is housed there. And then the DEX on the other side, Sushi again, let's say, just gets in real USDC and spits out whatever asset. So there is no risk at all, right? When they're implementing, when any big application is implementing a new messaging protocol, the risk is that there's some, again, Polynetwork or whatever it may be, like there's some problem within this, within consensus or whatever it may be, and it just tells your application like, hey, all that liquidity belongs here, but it wasn't real on the other side, right? And so that's sort of like always the big risk. And so this now allows that to be completely abstracted away from every single application doing this step, which allows them to have almost riskless integration into doing this. It's just a direct integration into UI. So it's basically just a pull request. On top of this, you know, basically every... So integration level, sort of riskless there, which is like really great property. And then aside of this, like obviously you have all of these other things. So we can dive into kind of the bridging trilemma now where, and this is something that it stemmed from Ryan and I having this long argument where there's kind of three main properties within this trilemma, which is instant guaranteed finality, 100% native assets and unified liquidity, right? And every bridge today only has one or two out of three.
Okay, let's repeat them slowly because not everyone can be up to pace with you.
So unified liquidity is basically having single, so right now almost everything is pairwise liquidity. If it's in native assets, it's pairwise liquidity. So this is, you might have a pool of, I'll just keep using USDC. USDC on chain A, and you're going to have a pool on chain B. And then if you want to also connect chain A to chain C, that's a different pool. You're going to make a pool of chain A and a pool of chain C. chain A, chain D, chain A, chain E. And so this is, you know, pairwise liquidity across the chains. If you only have, you know, $1 billion of USDC, the more chains you have, the more kind of thin this is going to get. Unified liquidity is a concept of having one single pool of liquidity on your chain A tied to all of these chains simultaneously. Now, one of the reasons that people don't do now native assets is that you run into this issue of, if I send a transaction from chain A to chain B saying, you know, I've added some money here, I'm going to subtract some tokens over there, some money over there. And then before you get there, these other chains basically send in requests and they drain the pool. And now the pool doesn't have enough money to fulfill your request. What happens there? How do you build around that? So, you know, does the user need to leave this flow, go to that chain and pay to revert the transaction? Does the user pay 2x gas fees ahead of times in order to cover the revert if it's needed, and then they get refunded on the destination chain? Does the protocol revert it? If so, that's like a very easy attack where you drain the pool and just spam it with transactions that it has to revert. So there are all these kind of issues with that. And so that, you know, that's one of the big reasons right now. You don't see anything that's unified liquidity in native assets. Instant guaranteed finality is the concept of knowing at the source chain, before the transaction resolves on the source, that it will resolve on the destination chain. So most bridges right now are structured where you're going to lock an asset on chain B and you're going to mint a synthetic asset on the destination chain. And then you'll, you know, burn that and you'll unlock your original. And so this has instant guaranteed finality because they have the ability to mint the asset on the other chain. But it doesn't have native assets, right? So one of the big problems with this, especially now, is you're moving to a lot more applications are moving natively multi-chain. So your Aaves, your Curves, your MIMS, like there's just not a lot of use always for wrapped assets. If you have four different bridges, you're gonna have four different versions of the asset. You might have MIM natively deploy like $10 million on Avalanche, but have like $30 million bridged in over AnySwap or something. And the MIM that ends up on that chain over the bridge is a different MIM than the MIM that MIM is natively deployed, right? And so like you have to have some swap function and some liquidity between them. You need to add like what's getting integrated into lending protocols or DEXs or all of that. Like where does liquidity live? If you've ever tried to wrap or bridge USDC from like Solana to Ethereum over Wormhole, you get like a Wormhole USDC that has no liquidity, no pairs, no use. Like, you know, it's just like what you can't even do anything. So it's really kind of restrictive where the wrapped asset that the bridge is issuing needs to be natively supported in a bunch of chains, which means all the other ones become more or less useless. And it also means there's just what you're getting, like they own the mint supply, they own the control of the mint. So you're getting just like a wrapped vanilla ERC-20. So you can't have any custom functionality. You have something that's rebasing or any of these other things that are built in, like you cannot do that over these existing bridges that do that. So as more and more projects implement natively across multiple chains, this is going to become a bigger and bigger issue. So hopefully I described the three pieces of that trilemma okay, with native assets, instant guaranteed finality, and unified liquidity. So like those are the three trade-offs, and you're taking one or two in almost every instance so far.
And it's important to note that nobody does instant guaranteed finality unless they're minting. So that is to have instant guaranteed finality and end up on the source destination chain with native assets is something that no one does.
Correct.
Now, on the user end of things, like I think a lot of users, especially when bridging today, they're focusing on the costs of bridging an asset from one chain to another. How does this trilemma solution that you guys have here with Stargate create a user experience and maybe related to like the costs that a user might incur relative to existing solutions?
Yep. So I will say a couple of things. First of all, I will say that all existing bridges prior to today really focus on the user. They focus on an individual coming and wanting to bridge an asset to go to the chain and bridging that asset. And that's fine. We have that as a use case. Of course, we've thought about that, but we focus far, far more on the applications themselves. It is our thesis that 95% plus of bridging is going to be driven by the applications that are building cross-chain rather than the individual user. So this is, you know, your DEXs, your yield aggregators, all of these different applications that are building, like they're going to be the ones interacting with these bridges in the middle, and they're going to be the one driving like by far the most of the volume. But as an individual, again, the big thing is when you're getting these wrapped assets on the destination chain, I think one of the big issues is that there's no use for it. Like you get the wrapped asset and then you take it and then you swap it to another asset. So like you pay another fee on the other side. Like, of course, if you have a real asset on chain A, if you have a USDC or you have whatever that may be, like you just want the actual thing on the other chain, right? You don't want to have four bridges, each have their own derivative of USDC. And, you know, some of them are different synthetics. And like, at the end of the day, you just get it and there is nothing to do and you just swap it to the thing that you actually want. So like, why don't we skip that step? Why are we charging an extra 30 bips to the user? Like, why don't we just bridge to exactly what they want? So yeah, every user is going to miss out on that additional swap on the other end if they're not trying to switch assets, if they're just bridging. At the end of the day, you know, you're basically paying a transaction on the source chain, a transaction on the destination chain, and that's just like that must be done, right? That is how any cross-chain works, is you have to resolve a transaction on both chains because you have to inform them. So you'll pay gas on the source, you'll pay gas on the destination, and that's it, right? So hopefully that answers it. But yeah, I think really you're going to eliminate this additional step of getting some unwanted asset that hopefully has liquidity, but sometimes doesn't have that much of it. And so you're saving yourself slippage and you know, a swap fee.
Yeah, I agree. I think long-term, right, bridges should be reserved or likely be wholly used by power users on the kind of consumer level. And eventually they get abstracted away from the user experience where, you know, we don't have to go through this process and sending a transaction and praying that the bridge actually works and you know, our assets end up on our destination chain. So I think you know, focusing on that application to application layer is really quite interesting and frankly is a larger market in the long term.
Yeah, we completely agree. And if you, you know, again, most of the stuff now is viable at a user perspective. It's like, maybe there are some things you don't want in there, but you can use it. It gets the job done for the most part. But at an application level, it's almost impossible. Like, you're talking to integrate any of these existing bridges into, you know, to do, let's say, just simple DEX case of like swap bridge swap, right? To do that, they need to integrate an entire custom flow. You know, you have to have the user switch wallets, you have to have the user get the native chain asset in that wallet to claim the transaction to then continue processing on the other end. It's like 15 clicks for the user at least, multiple wallet changes, multiple different types of gas assets. And all of this needs to be built in to application flow. And you're using something, you know, using Wormhole to do this. Like, the application needs to build in, like, listening to Wormhole to know when this is hitting the destination chain to do these different things. It's like, it's really, really difficult application layer. And, you know, for us, it's literally a wrapped contract. That's all you do. You interact it exactly how you do now. You wrap your contracts, you interact with Stargate, and it's one single click paid only in source gas from the source chain. User clicks once, asset they want drops in their wallet on the destination chain. They don't need native gas. They don't need destination gas. They don't need any of these things. So you're swapping assets, you're doing the swap bridge swap, you're going to click once, let's say in the Uniswap UI or SushiSwap UI, you're going to click one single time, and that asset that you're going to on the destination chain is just going to drop in your wallet on the destination chain, and you're going to have it. So if that's gas, again, you're not getting a wrapped gas that you need to go and then get native gas to claim on the thing and then swap to what you want or unwrap. You're getting real native gas. So I'll be publishing a demo next week, most likely, either this week or next week, that shows me going between four chains on testnets, the equivalent of going, you know, ETH to Matic to BNB to AVAX and back, having only starting with ETH, having no any asset and any of the other chains, and just one click going, okay, ETH, now we're here, this, now we're here, and back. And like, we think that's just the way that all applications are going to kind of demand to work from the user perspective. And I think it's one of the most attractive properties in actually creating something that's a composable layer between these, because it's really tough to claim composability when it requires, again, like kind of 15 steps and all of this custom, integration.
Yeah, thanks for that. This sounds fantastic, actually, and this is in large part why we got very excited with Layer 0. I want to circle back on the trilemma that you mentioned, and especially the instant guaranteed finality part, because this is something new. This is something that that doesn't exist, to best of my knowledge, in other solutions. So, would you like to expand on that point? Maybe Ryan can take this if he wants to.
Yeah, I guess what we mean by the instant guaranteed finality is that the transaction is guaranteed to show, like, the whatever you're trading, right, is guaranteed to show up on the destination chain if it successfully commits on the source. So when that is completed, you don't have to go check your wallet and see if it's going to show up. You know it's final, and that it will end up on your source wallet. Other applications out there, there's a chance that it could revert, right? Because they don't know if the assets exist on the other side. They have to wait for the block confirmations. And by the time they get there, like Brian explained about where there's this race condition, they could get there and it had to revert. And so building on top of something like a bridge that doesn't have instant guaranteed finality for like a dApp developer means they have to handle this case where if they get there on the other side, do they revert? Do they pay for that? If they pay for that, that's an attack vector because people could just spam an empty pool and they'll be had to pay for all the reversion. Does a user have to pay for that? Do they have to put that in their whole flow, right? Instead, they can just send the payload, send over the token or whatever asset they're moving, and they know it's going to get there on the other side, and they don't have to worry about any kind of reversion.
And just specifically more than get there, right? They know that the asset exists on the other side. Enough of the asset exists for them
to
take.
Yeah, it's guaranteed.
Right? Because there are pools there. But it is the guarantee as it resolves in the source that there will be enough of that asset on the destination chain. And again, this is something we'll publish the paper on this kind of shortly. We've talked about this over kind of a Medium post, but the way that this functions is actually quite interesting. It would have been novel and semi-interesting if it's between two chains. If you're just doing this pairwise, like, that's fine. Again, nobody else is doing that right now, so we thought that was interesting. But Ryan and I had this huge argument where I was yelling that we had to kind of decide between unified liquidity or instant guaranteed finality, and like, we can only get one or the other. And it was probably 3 hours of us yelling at each other. And he came back to me 3 days later with kind of this really elegant solution to have both and kind of solve this entire trilemma. So the solution we will publish that does have exactly this one single pool of unified liquidity in native assets with instant guaranteed finality to all chains. So, like, you're talking orders of magnitude greater capital efficiency than versus pairwise solution, the property of instant guaranteed finality, which allows it to be just completely composable because, again, if it resolves on source, there is a 100% guarantee it goes through on destination. So no application needs to build around these edge cases. They can do it. Their users don't even need to know necessarily that it's happening in the middle. So we're very excited to publish the paper. Happy to talk about it like a little bit more, but it's really quite unique.
Yeah, that's fantastic. I'm looking forward to it. I wonder also the development overhead of building applications on layer zero. And on that note, could you maybe talk about the chains that Stargate is going to support, like, initially, and then what other chains can it support in future?
Yep. Yeah, absolutely. So in terms of overhead, it's as we described, there's literally, so layer zero endpoint lives on each chain. Endpoint is basically a library of on-chain smart contracts that deal with validation and messaging. And so when you're building an application, all you do is you implement these two functions of send and receive. You're literally sending a bytes payload, a generic bytes payload with a small header that includes the destination chain, the destination chain ID, the contract you're going to, et cetera. And then everything else in there is whatever you, the application, want to structure. So again, super modular, and then you're going to implement receive, which is, hey, you have a bytes payload coming to you. Like, how am I going to interpret this? What am I going to do when I get that message? So it's really like that is everything there is to do. There are the configurable pieces if you want in terms of choosing your Oracle, choosing your relayer, choosing block comps for each pathway. There are all of those other kind of levers. But in terms of implementation, like that is it. It is meant to be dead simple. We'll publish hopefully really beautiful documentation that kind of walks through a lot of worked examples and makes this really as easy as humanly possible for people. In terms of chains, we are launching EVM first. So there's a little bit of a caveat in that, like, we need the oracles to be able to support sort of the passing of the block header between each of these pathways. You know, we've been working quite closely with Chainlink and Bend, and they say they should be able to support this stuff. So we're really optimistic we'll have, most of these kind of from day one or very early on. But from an EVM system, you know, we're thinking Ethereum, Avalanche, Binance Smart Chain, Polygon, Phantom, Arbitrum, Optimism, like those are like the usual suspects, right? Like that's our goal, is kind of launch with the majority of those chains, assuming everything is sort of ready to go both on our end and their end. But EVMs are quite easy once you've done the first, right? So after that, let's say the next rolling 9 months, you know, you're talking most of the primary non-EVMs, so Solana, Terra, Polkadot, Cosmos, Algorand, etc. More of those are kind of popping up every day, but that's kind of what we're looking at is when you're doing non-EVMs, there's a little bit more of a technical lift that you need to do proof translation, right? So you need to be able to take a Merkle-Patricia proof and validate it in Rust, and you need to be able to take a Solana like proof of history and validate it in Solidity on the EVM. It's just a little bit more manual than going between the EVM chains and primarily being able to kind of like just take the endpoint and deal with a little small nuances.
So I'm going to ask you guys a bit of a degen question, because we think we've got a few degen listeners on our podcast. And that's, you know, when token, and more specifically, you know, what is the token structure here with regard to layer zero? Like, what is it used for? What can people do with it? And then, you know, is there going to be a token specifically for Stargate? And how might that be used within the application?
Sure. I will say, you know, all of this is a very hypothetical conversation. There's no guarantee of any token. Like right now, everything has been purely technological based. We're building this protocol. But you can imagine, as with most things in the system, that, you know, maybe something like that would help, you know, align incentives across the system. So, there's a couple levers when you're building a system like Layer Zero in terms of, you know, what that might entail or what that might look like. I think you sort of have the oracles kind of have their own security model, and they're getting paid for doing that. They each have their own structure. And then you have the relayers are performing this job of, you know, taking a transaction proof out of a full node and submitting it to the destination chain. And so, you know, the primary parties there are like, okay, possibly there's a very small fee around messaging on a per message basis. If that was the case, then, you know, probably the bulk of that would go to the relayer. Maybe a very small percentage would go to network. The relayer would kind of need their own incentive structure. So, the relayer is getting paid to perform this action, but you would probably want some sort of like bonding system. So maybe there's an insurance fund on each relayer, and the relayer would need to decide maybe of the fee that's coming in, right? Some of that would go to the insurance fund and some of that would go to the relayer. An insurance fund with just the relayer staking into is fine. That's like an okay bonded system, but it's probably a little bit better if you have kind of users also able to bond into these things and participate in kind of securing the network. And obviously they would be rewarded for that in some manner, probably through part of this relayer fee being allocated to the staking pool or this insurance fund that's kind of living on the relayers. And that kind of gets you to, let's say, the bulk of maybe a solid incentive structure. And then obviously, you know, maybe the contracts that are dealing across these chains, you know, there's probably some incentive for them to deal in a native token rather than dealing in source gas. I mean, there's a discount for them to kind of hold this or use this as sort of the payment mechanism. So there's, you know, a bunch of different levers, but I would say primarily, like, you have the user applications that are transacting across these chains or whoever is implementing that. And like, the bulk, like, they, you know, they're probably going to say, pay some fee for using the system. And then, you know, of that fee, you want the bulk of that to go to kind of securing the system. And how do you secure it? Like, there's this, you know, you have these relayers who are operating, and then, you know, you have potentially the broader user base or token base would be kind of supporting that through bonding into certain relayers or sort of helping the network via securing it via these insurance funds. So something like that. And then Stargate specifically, so while Layer Zero doesn't have or need liquidity, Layer Zero is a messaging protocol. It doesn't necessarily need pools of liquidity across any chain. So it's very important to understand that it's a messaging protocol. It's not a bridge. It's not a DEX. It's not a, you know, it's not, and these are things that are built on top of Layer Zero. So there might be lots of bridges and lots of DEXs all implemented on top of Layer Zero. Stargate itself is specifically meant to solve this liquidity transfer for all of these applications that are trying to integrate across layer zero and want to leverage that as opposed to recreating it themselves. Obviously, they can recreate it themselves. Each one can house their own, but this is something that's easy and composable for people to utilize. And so for that, you imagine sort of a much more traditional structure where you have, you know, you have some sort of emissions for providing liquidity. And like, it's basically this trade-off between, you know, these days it's moving, let's say DeFi 2.0 movement, where you're kind of moving between, you know, the protocol is providing emissions. The people participating are providing liquidity. Obviously users and people using it are sort of swapping and using that liquidity, which generates some fees for the protocol. And, you know, these days things are moving much more towards like protocol and liquidity. So the protocol is sort of owning maybe a piece of this liquidity, a piece of these fees, et cetera. So there are quite a few kind of interesting dynamics that can come into play there. But if hypothetically, you know, these kind of things were being worked on or discussed, I would say those might be a way you might look at kind of building these systems.
Hypothetically speaking, right? that was great. You know, one of the things that we frequently ask on ventures when we're due diligencing plays is, we want to know what the biggest challenges are for teams. And so I'm going to put you guys here on the spot here and ask you, what do you foresee your biggest challenge over the coming months?
Yeah, I think it's a great question. You know, I think we were really fortunate where, he doesn't hype himself up enough, but Ryan is just like, unbelievable. I tweeted the other day that you know, when you're talking about like top Solidity devs in the world, like people don't know it yet, but once they see a lot of this stuff, he's a true savant. He's one of my closest friends. We've worked together for 15 plus years. We've attracted some unbelievable talent to the team. So like, we have incredible engineers across the board. People coming from like the office of the CTO at Red Hat. We're like the largest open source contributors to a bunch of projects across like the largest open source, one of the largest open source orgs in the world. Like people are really deep into this stuff, but Ryan just like, he stands apart. Yeah. So on the technical side, we're actually probably more comfortable than most projects are at this stage. I think a lot of people, just aren't people who are as technically equipped as we have been. But that said, you kind of never know how like the announcement stage. We were really excited about what we were building. We attracted like an unbelievable group of partners and VCs in the group. Obviously you guys were part of that and we're super, super happy to have you guys on board. You guys have been amazing. But you know, we have one single tweet, I think on the Twitter, maybe two now that Stargate's announced, and it's like, you know, 30,000 plus followers on the Twitter, like 10,000 plus people in the Discords and Telegrams. And like things have just grown and escalated where before we had this, I didn't realize it at the time, but it was a real luxury to just build in stealth. We just built in stealth completely heads down for like, you know, almost three quarters of a year. And we didn't announce anything to anybody until all of the code was completely written, protocols working, we're testing it on testnet, it's frozen, it's under audit, right? So like layer zero is just completing its third audit now. Everything has gone great. So we'll have three completed audits. Stargate is just in now for two audits. And so basically we're just waiting for those audits to be wrapped. Like everything is done. The technical work, there's ongoing technical work. There are all, you know, a huge amount of stuff we need to do like in the future, but the core stuff launching for EVM is done. And that's great. What we need now is sort of like, it's just scaling, right? We were six people when we announced, I think we're up to 11 now. But the amount of resources that we need, whether it's from the community side, whether it's from like the sheer amount of inbound interest that we've gotten from projects on like the BD side, there's just so many things that need to get done. Everybody right now is pulling just like, you know, 18 plus hour days. Like everybody is just in it and it's been amazing. And like, I love everybody for that. But you know, that's not going to be able to last forever, where everyone's just like 7 days a week, 18 hours a day. So, you know, we need to fill out, we need to scale, we need to grow. And I think that right now is our biggest challenge is, just getting ourselves up to a size that can handle kind of where this has already gone. And only seems to be sort of growing more rapidly.
Yeah, you guys need to get some sleep. Yeah. That was definitely one of the things that we saw really early on with you guys was your grind and also your competence within the technical fields and being able to explain, frankly, you know, these really complex subjects to a lowly ape like myself. And I think that's it's a really strong skill to have, especially when you're building something so technically robust and complex. Awesome, guys. Well, you know, on that note, you know, where can people kind of like contribute and participate and help you guys out in some of these areas that you may need help in?
Yeah. So, I mean, coming to the Discord, coming to the Telegram, as mentioned, it's a bit of a mess right now. It's hectic in both, but I think, I'm there every single day. You'll find me at 4 a.m. having conversations with anybody who wants to have a conversation about sort of the technology and what we're working on and ways to get involved. If you're interested in sort of coming to work with us, jobs@layerzerolabs.org. We are happily accepting any new applicants. But yeah, I think we're going to be releasing a huge amount of information over like the next 6 weeks. We're going to be rolling out more and more stuff. We're going to be rolling out documentation. So like, if you want to build, if you want to just come play with Stargate when it first releases, anything that you guys want to do to get involved, there's a ton of ways. We're bringing in people to sort of make sure the community has more ways to get involved, because we've seen, like, community has been amazing so far. We've seen, 1,000 person groups spin up in kind of like Mandarin, Turkish, Korean, Japanese. Like, there's been a lot of posts in Japanese, like blog posts, and people really diving into the technology, which has been really amazing, because this is like not something we've catalyzed at all. We have no structure for kind of, no presented structure for like rewarding community or like anything like this. This is a completely organic interest, and it's been amazing to see. But that's it. We want to find ways that we can grow together with the community, engage more. So we are finding more and more ways to do that. We're bringing in people whose sole focus is that. So yeah, if you want to get involved, just come hang out, ask questions, and let your intellectual curiosity guide you, and hopefully we can build some cool stuff together.
Awesome. That was a great closing note, guys. We really appreciate you taking the time today to join, and we're looking forward to the future of Layer Zero and Stargate and the many endless possible applications that I think will be built on top of the infrastructure that you have here. Appreciate your time today. Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Awesome. Thanks so much for having us, guys.
Thank you, guys.
Hey, everyone. Thanks for listening to the podcast. If you enjoyed it, please support the show by hitting subscribe on iTunes, writing a review, or sharing this episode on Twitter and LinkedIn. And stay tuned for our next episode out soon.